Mark chapter 5, verse 21 says, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. Here's what we know about this guy. He is a leader in his town. He led the Jewish synagogue. He's well known. He's well respected. He's well to do. He's got a good family, a good life. He's a good guy. He seems to have everything together. It seems like God has blessed him a lot. But when Jesus walks by this day, Jairus breaks through the crowd and falls down in front of him. We don't see that happen very much in America, begging and pleading and grabbing somebody's leg. But this is still done in Middle Eastern cultures. It just indicates desperation. And Jairus was a desperate man. In verse 23, it says, Jairus pleaded earnestly with Jesus, my little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. We will eventually learn that this girl is about 12 years old, probably just beginning to discover her young ladiness. And like most fathers of girls that age, Jairus finds his daughter to be wondrous. But now she's lying in her bedroom dying. And you know that as the leader of the local church, he's asked people to pray for his daughter. And you know that as a financially well-off man, he's brought in the very best doctors to try to treat her. And you know he and his wife have rearranged everything in life to deal with this situation. But they could not figure out why God would let this happen to their family. They were godly people. They were leaders in their church. They were kind to others. Why would he let this happen? Have you ever had moments in life where life doesn't seem right, doesn't seem fair, doesn't seem good? Moments where you think, well, if this is how God treats his friends, it's no wonder he doesn't have many. They kept hoping that God would relent at some point and heal their girl, but nothing helped, nothing changed. She just kept getting worse and worse. So Jairus goes to find Jesus and begs him to come touch his daughter. They'd listened to Jesus, they'd watched Jesus, they knew people, friends of theirs probably, that Jesus had healed. Jairus probably invited Jesus to preach for them on Pulpit Exchange Sabbath. When no regular remedies helped his daughter, Jairus decided to go find Jesus. He figured if Jesus could touch their daughter, she could be saved. And can you imagine the relief Jairus felt when he has Jesus in tow and they're heading for home? He got to Jesus, Jesus said yes, and now Jesus and the crowd are heading for Jairus' house. It is all good. It is really good. All they have to do is get there, and everything's going to be all right. Be all right. Just get there. I once drove from downtown Canandaigua to the Victor Walmart without hitting a single red light. I had green lights on Main Street in Canandaigua all the way up 332. I came over on 96, all green, all the way through Victor into the parking lot of Walmart, not one red light, green all the way. And I thought, wow, God must really want me to be here right now. I thought maybe I'd see someone I haven't seen in a long time. Maybe someone would need CPR. Maybe somebody would want to get baptized. I didn't know. I'm there. I'm ready. I thought it must be important for me to be here right now. So I went in expectantly. Nothing. I looked around. I walked around looking for people. Somebody. I bought my Diet Dr. Thunder and I left. Nothing. But Jairus was rejoicing with every step they took because it was one step closer to being home, to his daughter being good. When suddenly Jesus stops walking and he looks around and he says, who touched me? I mean, it's a crowd flowing along through the streets, kind of like when the Bills win a game and everybody's leaving the stadium. Everybody's bumping into everybody, but it doesn't matter. But Jesus stops and he says, who just touched me? In verse 31, Mark says, you see people crowding against you, the disciples answered, and yet you can ask who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Now, no doubt Jairus is on the side of the 12, thinking, come on, Jesus, nobody touched you. Everybody's touching you. Come on, let's go. Time is of the essence. But Jesus stops, and Mark tells us the rest of the story. Mark says, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors, and she had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized power had gone out of him, and he turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" It's not just that people are bumping into him, it's that a really, really sad lady had just drained goodness out of him. And here's what we know about this lady. She has been sick with a socially unacceptable disease for 12 years, which means no family, no friends, no job, no future. She is untouchable. We also know she's got no money because she spent it all unsuccessfully on doctors. We also know that she's lost hope. It has been 12 years, and there's no answer out there. This is not an isolated setback in her life. Her life has been bad for a very long time, and it's going to stay that way. She is different from Jairus in almost every way that matters, except one. Like Jairus, this lady thinks, based on what she's seen and heard, that Jesus could fix things for her. Jairus came up boldly asking, saying, "Jesus, please come and put your hands on my girl." This lady has no standing in the community to ask like that. She would not think of walking up and just asking. So she tries to touch Jesus secretly, surreptitiously, sneakily, undetectedly. And when she did, when she grabbed the corner of his coat, she felt her body get healthy. And Jesus felt the power of God flow through him into her. Which is close as we come in the Bible anywhere to saying what it feels like to do a miracle. I've always assumed that doing miracles was work for Jesus, that each miracle took effort, because when Jesus did them, he was fixing something that was broken in the world, and nobody fixes anything broken in this world without it costing something. Mike Wiseman repaired the piano bench for the keyboard this week, but it cost him some of his Thursday evening. Mr. Eichler fixed the fan in the men's bathroom, but it cost him 2 days standing on a ladder. We could end the comments on how chilly it is in here each Sunday, but it would cost us $25,000. My wife can cure my yearning for a certain Greek dessert, but it costs her an afternoon of baking. Healing diseases takes effort. You think not? Ask a doctor or a dentist or a surgeon or a therapist. Healing broken people takes effort. Think not, ask a counselor or a teacher or a social worker or a sponsor. Healing broken environments takes effort. Think not, ask an engineer or a construction worker or a landscaper or a hazmat worker. Healing hunger takes effort. Think not, ask a hunter or a farmer or a trucker or a butcher or a chef or a dishwasher. All the miracles Jesus did fixed things. And when we do things in those categories, it's work. I think Jesus used himself up when he was healing people all night long. Not that he begrudged the effort, but it did cost him something to do it. So here in the crowd, he feels power go out of him, and he wants to see who had taken it. So when he asks, after a moment, an embarrassed but very happy, healthy lady steps forward. And Jesus announces to all there that she's now okay and to be accepted as such. Verse 33 of Mark 5 says, "Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at Jesus' feet. And trembling with fear, she told him the whole truth. And he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering.'" Her faith had healed her. Her confidence in Jesus had healed her. Her trust in his power had healed her. That's the key that unlocked the power of God in her body. That's the thing that inspired her to get close to Jesus. Her faith in him. I have an analogy here. You might not like it. I think faith is a lot like jumper cables. Hear me out. Jumper cables on their own are worth nothing. I have had many cars in my lifetime that would not start regularly. So I always keep jumper cables in my trunk. That's good, right? Nope. Jumper cables do me no good whatsoever to have them. The jumper cables do not bring dead batteries back to life unless there's another power source. Now, when I hook up my dead battery with jumper cables to another battery that has juice, that's when stuff starts to happen. Because jumper cables by themselves do nothing of value. But when you connect what's dead to what's alive through jumper cables, then you've got something, which is like faith. Confidence in something does not help you at all unless what you're confident in has juice. For instance, a lot of Bills fans were confident that our team would win it all this year, like they are every year. But faith in the Bills does not matter so far ever. Faith is only as good as what it is hooked up to. Did you hear about the jumper cables that walked into the bar? And the bartender said, well, I'll serve you, but don't be starting anything. So did this lady's faith heal her? I mean, Jesus said so, so obviously that's true. But actually, the power in Jesus healed her, and her faith connected her to that power. Her faith was like jumper cables for her to get in touch with Jesus' power. He had the power to heal her as he walked by. But she wasn't healed as he walked by. Not until she touched him in faith, in confidence, trusting. Then his power was transferred to her. And did you notice, after he healed her, this is the second time, someone is holding on to his feet. Okay, back to Jairus, who is looking at his watch, pacing nervously on the side, mumbling to himself. He's got nothing against Jesus healing this lady. He probably knows the lady. He's glad for her. He's got nothing against Jesus healing any lady. He just wishes it wasn't taking so long and that there was no question and answer after the healing. He's thinking, I was first in line, Jesus, let's go. And then comes the news that he did not want, that no one wants. In verse 35, it says, while Jesus was still speaking with the lady, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, and they said, your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher anymore? Overhearing what they said, Jesus told Jairus, don't be afraid, just believe. They were too late. They had waited too long. There would be no second miracle today. But Jesus looked at Jairus and said, don't give up hope. Trust me on this. I got it. And they walked to Jairus' house in silence, I'm guessing. What else could be said? When they arrived, the funeral had already started. There were mourners, there was music, there was crying. And Jesus walked in and said, what's all this? The girl's not dead, she's just sleeping. Which made them all laugh at him. So he forced everyone out of the house, and he took the girl's parents into her room. And verse 41 of chapter 5 says, Jesus took the girl by the hand and said to her, Talitha kum, which means, little girl, I say to you, get up. And immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. And he gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Did you get that? Jesus takes the little girl's hand, brings life back into her body. She's no longer dead. Then he tells her parents, she's hungry, and don't tell anybody about this miracle. Which is odd because the miracle he did on the way there, he went out of his way to bring all of people's attention to that. He made the bleeding lady identify herself to talk to him in front of everybody. Here, when he does something even bigger, he says, don't mention it. What's up with that? So glad you asked. Because that brings us to one of the great lessons in Mark chapter 5, which is one of the broken things in our world that Jesus fixes is our separation. Healing the lady physically on the street, great as it was only part of what Jesus did for her that day. Jesus also wanted to heal her emotionally, relationally, communally. He wanted to let people know her newly given status in the world. She was no longer to be considered an outcast, an untouchable, persona non grata. No more exiling her to Misfit Island. She was now allowed to play in all the reindeer games. She had been living separately from everyone, but Jesus said, no more, no longer. He was publicly declaring that she could once again be part of the group. Because one thing that really matters to Jesus is that people learn to do life together well. That matters to him. Like here, Jesus makes sure that everyone knows that they can invite this lady over for coffee now. And Jesus tells these parents to stop staring and get their daughter something to eat. He puts people together. And in the deal with the horror movie guy that Linda and I read about, Jesus is sitting with the man, talking. And then he sends the guy back to be with his people. He says, go home and tell your own people what happened. Jesus is always bringing people together. And often he's bringing people together who otherwise wouldn't get together, right? Like Jesus' group of 12 includes tax collectors working for the government and revolutionaries who are trying to overthrow the government. And he got fishermen from the sticks, and he's got some accountants from the big city. The people who are following him, Jesus has a demon-possessed lady and a religious leader nationally known. And he has somebody from the White House. It's wild how Jesus could bring different kinds of people together. But he was all about it. He still is. Even in our congregation, a lot of people in this room would never do life together if it was not for Jesus. We have had, as part of our church, medical doctors and nurses and people who practice essential oils. We have had teachers and students and aides. We've had people with PhDs and we've had dropouts. We have business owners and factory workers. We've had engineers and accountants and entrepreneurs. We've had policemen and we've had criminals. We've had Yankee fans. We've had Mets fans. We've had, can't even say it. We've had Dominicans and Nigerians and Transylvanians. We've had firemen. We've had arsonists. We've had dog people and cat people and horse people. We've had Republicans and Democrats. We've had drinkers and teetotalers. We've had people who can ski and people with broken legs. We've had people who like country music. And we have people with good taste in music. Have you seen that bumper sticker that says, if your religion is causing you to hate certain people, you're doing it wrong? Which sounds clever, but is not technically accurate. It's true that people who follow Jesus are being trained not to hate people. We are called by our Lord to lay down our lives for other people. That is absolutely true. But one major religion says that those who oppose that religion should be brutally killed. One religion out there teaches that if you don't hate infidels, you're not doing it right. So that bumper sticker technically isn't right. By the way, Christians are not forbidden to hate. We are just forbidden to hate people. We can hate evil. For instance, I hate addiction and what it does to families. I hate neglect and what it does to children. I despise starvation and torture and abuse. I hate death. I hate when people are tricked by the evil one into thinking if they do it wrong, it will somehow help them. I think Jesus hates all of that too. But I don't hate the people who are being tricked. Those are the people Jesus died for. Those are the people we live for. And when we can help one of them escape from the evil one's trap, and when that person then is restored to his family, his community, his church, to sanity, when Jesus helps the separation end and the person be restored to life, that is religion done right. And that's what Jesus was and is all about. A major point of today's page of scripture is we were made to do life with other people. And if you ever get to the point where you think it would be better for you not to hang around with people, you're not doing it right. Another big point, a second big point from Mark chapter 5. Part of ending all of separation in the world is in touch. Touch is big. And we say it a lot because it is so important. Warm to the touch. A nice touch, touchy-touchy, she touched me, he got the touch. Stay in touch, he's out of touch, he's a little touched. Do not touch, I could almost touch him. Touch me in the morning. Two-hand touch, you can't touch this. Touch tone phones, just a touch. Reach out and touch, we touched on that. Very touching. You touch me, I'll kill ya. Touche. Touch matters. There is power in touch. Touch done right brings life. I heard about a mom who had cardiac arrest during delivery, and they laid the newborn baby on the mom's chest and stimulated her brain function because doctors have found that such skin-to-skin contact can reawaken comatose moms. Touching is how we communicate a lot in life. A handshake, pat on the back, tousling of the hair, an arm about the shoulder, a high five, a chest bump, slap on the behind, headbutt, pile on center ice, physical therapy, massage, acupuncture, chiropractory, holding hands, tickling, an embrace, kiss on the neck, slow dancing. All are touches that can bring life and end separation when done appropriately. But like every good gift that God gives us, all those things can be misused as well. Touch can ruin relationships and signal wrongness in life too. Intimacy outside of marriage, violent contact, withholding touch. Several years back, I talked with a widow who was hanging out with our congregation, and she drove quite a ways to be here every Sunday. And on one Sunday, I asked her why. Why do you come? It's a long trip. And she said she liked coming to our gatherings because here she would be hugged. And I said, not by me. And she said, I understand why you don't, and I agree it's probably good for preachers not to. But I've got no friends or family who care about me. And I go all week without being touched by anyone, sometimes without talking to anyone. And I know when I come here on Sunday mornings, people will hug me, and that helps. Touching, being touched, it matters because God built us for connection. Touch helps end separation in the world. Last one, big point number three. The man who was fighting demons in the beginning that we read about fell down at Jesus' feet. The lady who had been sick for 12 years touched Jesus and she was healed. Jesus went into the bedroom and he took the little girl's hand in his and she came back to life. How cool is that? They could just touch Jesus. They could be touched by Jesus. If we found out that Jesus had come back and was hanging out down in Honeyoy or something, would you not try to get there and maybe sneak up behind him and just touch his shirt? It seems like such an advantage to have the chance to actually touch him. Lady was riding on the bus one day. She was standing next to a young man. They were both holding on the same pole, and he was staring at her. And eventually he said, excuse me, ma'am, this is my stop. And she, since she wasn't blocking his way, she was confused. She said, well, go ahead. He said, and this is my pole. And she had no idea what he was talking about until he added, I just bought it at the hardware store to hold up my shower curtain. And she let go of the pole, and he picked it up and took it and carried it off the bus with him. Sometimes we are lucky to have something, but we don't know how lucky we are until it's taken away. We think, wow, those people were so lucky to live when Jesus was around. They got to touch him. But please don't miss it. There were many people on the road that day. Only one was healed. Many people bumped into Jesus, actually touched him, but only one asked his help. So it wasn't really physical contact that made the difference. It was her trust in him. Jesus said, your faith has enabled you to be well. And folks, Jesus still has a body, and he's keeping it, scars and all, and he is just as available to us today as he was to that lady. You can still come into contact with Jesus through your confidence in him today. Confidence which grows as you read about him, as you know about him, as you try him out and find him trustworthy, as you honor him, as you spend time in connection with other people who honor him. Trust that grows. You can touch God. You can be touched by God for real. Not physically, not right now, not physically. Like the little girl who jumped into her parents' bed during a bad thunderstorm one night, and the dad said, get back in your room. And the girl said, I'm too afraid. And the mom said, now go back in your room and know that God is with you. And the girl said, well, mom, I know God is with me right now, but I want somebody with skin on. We cannot touch Jesus like that. How about the little boy one night was told to go out in the back porch and bring the broom inside? And he said, it's too scary out there, mom. And the mom said, just remember, Jesus is with you wherever you go. So he opened the door. The little boy opened the door and looked out. It was really dark. And after a minute, he said, Jesus, if you're out there, hand me that broom. We cannot touch Jesus physically right now, but he can really touch us. And here's proof. I can show you how you know if Jesus has touched you or not, because he does it the same way now that he does back then. Once he does, things are different. Here's a lyrics to an old song about an auction that I heard once. Well, it was battered and scarred, and the auctioneer felt it was hardly worth his while to waste much time on the old violin, but he held it up with a smile. Well, it sure ain't much, but it's all we've got left. I guess we ought to sell it too. Oh, now who will start the bid on this old violin? Just one more and then we'll be through. And then he cried, one, give me $1. Who will make it two? Only $2. Who will make it three? $3 twice. Now that's a good price. Now who's going to bid for me? Raise up your hand now. Don't wait any longer. This auction's about to end. Who's got four? Just $1 more to bid on this old violin. Well, the air was hot, and the people stood around as the sun was setting low. From the back of the crowd, a gray-haired man came forward and picked up the bow. He wiped the dust from that old violin, then he tightened up the strings. Then he played out a melody, pure and sweet, sweeter than the angels sing. Then the music stopped, and the auctioneer, with a voice that was quiet and low, said, "Now what am I bid on this old violin?" And he held it up with a bow. Then he cried out, "One, give me 1,000. Who will make it two? Only 2,000. Who'll make it three? 3,000 twice? Yeah, that's a good price. Come on, who's going to bid for me?" And the people cried out, "What made the change? We don't understand." And the auctioneer stopped and said with a smile, "It was the touch of the master's hand." That's how you know that Jesus has touched you. Your life and your attitude and your personality is becoming noticeably more beautiful. When you are really in touch with Jesus, you start to change towards nicer. If you are connecting with him, your family starts to see you differently. Your coworkers wonder about you. Your neighbors can spot the change. Maybe even the police can see a difference in you. Tony Campolo was the inner city Philadelphia youth minister, and he was constantly bailing people from his youth group out of jail. They were gang members, but they were coming to church assemblies. They were listening, they were learning what it meant to be a Christian, but they were having a hard time breaking some old habits. One day, Tony told all of the youth group about a Christian camp, a week in the woods where you could swim and hike, where there were girls, where you could play basketball and have great food and you could learn things. And all the guys in his youth group seemed really interested until he told them it cost $175 for the week. And they all went, we don't have that money. So Tony said, "I will pay half your tuition if you will earn the money to pay your half." The next day, the police chief called Tony Campolo, which he often did, and he said, "You have to come down to the police station immediately." And when Tony got there, he saw 7 youth group guys locked up. He saw 7 of them, and he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm really trying. They're just not getting it." But the police chief was very excited. He said, "Oh, Tony, do you know why they're here?" And he said, "No, why are they here?" And the police chief said, "Because they were caught stealing cars and stripping the cars and selling them for parts. Isn't that great?" And Tony said, "Why is that great?" And the police chief said, they were stealing the cars to get money to go to your Christian camp." And he looked at the guys and he said, "I told you I would pay half if you'd work for the other half." And one of the teenagers in jail said, "You think it's easy stealing cars?" Tony shook his head. He said, "I am never going to be able to reach these kids." And the policeman said, "Tony, don't you get it? You already have. These guys have stolen all of their lives. This is the first time they've ever stolen anything for God." When you, by faith, connect with Jesus, when he touches your life, he makes a difference. He changes things. He helps you connect with other people. He changes you. Really, he stops the bleeding, and he brings life where there was none. But it is a choice where you say, "Wait, Jesus, please, sir, I need your help." And whether you have ever done that before or never done that before, this is the day that matters. And today, we can let Jesus walk right on by without reaching out to him, or we can fall at his feet and ask for his help. Your call. Let's pray.